From the studios of KPFK in Los Angeles, California, this is Indie Media On Air on Pacifica Radio. Welcome to Indie Media On Air. I'm Chris Burnett. Recently, I had the honor of sitting down in the studio at KPFK with four folks involved in the struggle at Standing Rock. They were on a tour to raise funds and promote awareness about what is happening on the ground in North Dakota, about their fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline, and their commitment to protect the water and indigenous lands. I was deeply moved, and I hope you will be too. If you are interested in supporting the folks at Standing Rock, you can reach them on Facebook at Red Warrior Camp, or by emailing chepa.cubias@gmail.com. That's Chepa, C-H-E-P-A, dot Cubias, C-U-B-I-A-S, @gmail.com. Now, my interview with Jules, Chepa, Jackie, and Anthony. Welcome to Indie Media On Air, and it's really a pleasure to have you all in studio to talk about Standing Rock. Maybe we can go around the table, and if you guys can introduce yourselves and what tribe you're from.
Mishis Duke, my name is Anthony Sewell. I'm Rumson Aloni from the Monterey area. Right now I live in occupied Oakland, the village of Huchin.
Iaqui, I'm Jackie Fawn from Klamath, California. I'm Muroc and Washoe on my dad's side, and I'm Filipino on my mom. I'm really blessed and honored to be Indipino, so good morning.
Thanks for having us, Chris. I'm Chepa Cubillas. I'm Lenca, just east of Cuscatlan, Pipil territory, and so-called El Salvador. My mom is Lenca and Sephardic Spanish Jew, and my father is Palestinian Italian, and that's why you see me wearing my kufiya today as well.
Hi, my name is Julie Richards, and I'm a member of the Oglala Lakota Nation.
Welcome to you all. As many of us at this station and in the movement have been following what's happening at Standing Rock, It's a moment of the solidarity of people coming together, the different tribes, the resistance to the pipeline and to the energy companies. Maybe you guys can tell us and tell our listeners how you came to this struggle and what it is about this struggle that, you know, you want to impart to people who are listening to this show.
Okay. Like I said, my name is Julie Richards. I'm a member of the Oglala Lakota Nation. I'm also the founder of the Mothers Against Meth Alliance. And my tribe is also a member of, we're a part of the Ocheti Shakowi. And that's the Seven Council Fires. And Standing Rock is also one of them. And I fight meth on my reservation. Meth is an epidemic in Indian country, and there was nowhere on my reservation to get help for my oldest daughter who became addicted. So I started my own program. I did research, and I started going out and doing education and awareness, and I started doing interventions with different families. We're just, you know, the on the ground, on the front lines of this war against meth, and in researching where the meth, you know, how it really made it into Indian country, it all leads back to the pipelines, the man camps. And so another part of my fight is also sex trafficking. You know, I do sex trafficking prevention. And so my place at the camp, I do those at the camp also now, as well as wellness for addicts when we get back. I'll start doing that. And so my the reason why, you know, I feel it's real important that I be there on the front lines representing Mothers Against Meth Alliance is because if we could stop it, you know, not only is our water being contaminated and our Mother Earth being desecrated, but our sisters are being forced into addiction and sex trafficking at a very young age, and they're, you know, disappearing and being murdered. So that's like, I'm at the front lines of that fight. And I'm also one of the ones who locked down, you know, because my grandmother fought at the last gathering we had was the Battle of Little Bighorn, and my great grandmother fought in that war, and she's a warrior woman. She's a survivor of that war. So, you know, I can't do no less than what she did, and I gotta stand up for the future of our generations, just like she did for me and my family.
Chepa?
All right. how I came to Standing Rock was the call out to all relatives from all directions, and coming together. Coming from SoCal, El Salvador, too, you know, we're going through the process of decolonization every day. So we have to uphold the responsibility that we have as earth and water protectors as we stand here on stolen land and the continuation, oppression, and genocide and abuse of our native communities. And as I arrived, I didn't know how long I was going to be out there. And it was very evident and clear that first day that I was going to be there indefinitely until we stopped this pipeline. It was met with so much love and support and unity. I think one of the first cries that I heard was that the eagle and the condor were together here fulfilling our prophecy, and that the seven generation, the seven fires, and they were here to stop the black snake. And then a huge cry of black snake killers broke out, and I knew I was home. I knew I was with my family.
Jackie?
Okay. Yeah. What brought me to Standing Rock is where I live is Klamath, California, and we have the Klamath River, and we're going through our water issues with all the dams and the salmon deaths. Like, we've already lost over 80% of our salmon population. It was the first time in 54 years we didn't have salmon at our salmon festival. And it's one of our people's sacred animals. And to hear, you know, more water issues happening, you got to go out and stand with your brothers and sisters. And it doesn't matter where, you know, when you get the call, you better get going. Because, you know, what kind of person doesn't pick up a call like that? And for me to go stand with relatives, like, for our water, you know, that's what we're here for. Why else would we live here? You know, just drop everything you have and come out. Because that's where it is. That's what we're living for, you know. We're living for our water. So, you know, when I have kids, I don't want to tell them I didn't try. And when my grandbabies look up at me and just say, like, how come all our water is brown? I'm like, you know, I tried. That's all I want to be able to tell them. You know, I want to be able to give them that clean water. So just be able to go out there and, like, see what's happening and what they're doing is, like, it's heartbreaking and sick, you know. And like Chepa said, you know, we're fighting this black snake. We all have these modern-day monsters coming through. Like, we have our dams. We have the oil rigs on the ocean and the pipelines. There's just so many monsters around us that people forget that they still exist. So, you know, when you get the call, you better answer.
Anthony.
I started doing any kind of, like, work like this regularly, consistently, maybe about, like, 4 or 5 years ago. And around that time, I went out to South Dakota to Liberation Day and met up with a bunch of folks out there that were doing organizing all over the country. And with that core group that we met there, we've been in touch for the past 4 or 5 years. And right now at Red Warrior Camp, you know, that core group is there holding it down as direct action group, you know. And so I've been blessed enough to be able to be on this path and to walk with other relatives that have the same mindset. And again, so when issues like this arise, you know, we got to go. You know, last year I was on the road with Oak Flat, defending Oak Flat, which still needs defense, you know, from John McCain, who's over there trying to make a copper mine. You know, out here in California, they're telling us we're in a drought, but then they got these oil rigs along the ocean that take millions upon millions upon millions of gallons of water per day, per rig. But they want to tell you it's because you're taking a long shower because you're sprinkling your grass too long. You know, so like we really got to think about these things and wake up and really see what's going on. You know, and even if you can't make it to Standing Rock, there's a Standing Rock right in your hometown. You need to figure out what's going on and stand up for your land where you're at. You know, there's no excuses for this. I don't care if people got jobs or bills or whatever it is to pay. All that's going to be irrelevant when everything's poisoned and people are dying. You know, and so really got to think about things, you know, whether we're talking about Standing Rock or we're talking about oil spills in the ocean or we're talking about all these other disasters that happen with the idea of greed. We got to think about these things and what can we do to get back. Right now we're here with Red Warrior Camp. And that's what brought me to Red Warrior Camp, was that mindset and that walk that I walk. And again, it's on the individual. You know, we urge people to look up security culture and find out what that is and what does that mean and how can that be effective and efficient in their lives today, every day. You know, things like that. And also, you know, people that haven't studied previous movements, study previous movements and look at the past histories of movements and how the U.S. government and other governments try to dismantle movements and have succeeded in almost dismantling movements. But we're still alive and we're still here fighting. So, you know, there's also a reason for that. So, you know, that's why I'm here. That's what I have to do at the camp. Again, as a warrior, which means you do whatever is needed, so that doesn't necessarily always mean that you're at the front line. Sometimes you're staying up at night watching the fire. You know, it really depends on what the situation is, but that's what I'm there for.
No doubt. Standing Rock in our hometowns, I mean, they're everywhere, right? It just hit me when you said that. It's really important for us to remember that these struggles are happening everywhere, and the fight to save this earth right now, you know, the oil pipelines, but, you know, what's happening with climate disruption, the poisoning of the oceans, the acidification of the oceans. The Arctic is the canary in the coal mine, the 5.6 degrees Celsius change since the last, you know, from the last 40 years, the methane, I mean, everything, right? This whole struggle is all connected. And there's so much of everything you all just said that I have so many questions for you, but I do want to understand how the direct action is working. Maybe people can talk about that. And then I want to understand a little bit more about solidarity that's happening with people all over the world, right? There's been direct action campaigns that people are picking up in different cities and going and confronting the owners of these energy companies. So I want to hear more about that and about the solidarity with Palestine. So there's a lot to talk about. So maybe we'll go back around, and if there's anything to add to that, or if you have something you really feel you need to get out, do that too.
All right, yeah. starting with direct action, as my brother here Aunt said, you know, Red Warrior Camp is directing the direct actions that are stopping construction at the pipeline. So that's what our camp in specific does, and that's why we're here and we're raising funds. And you'll see within our Facebook page as well that we've put up many statements of solidarity with our brothers and our sisters fighting these different monsters. As Jackie said earlier, we put out a Black Lives Matter solidarity statement because we are all fighting against these systems. Our Palestinian brothers and sisters in Gaza and our struggle against these powers of oppression that continue. I mean, we're fighting when we're talking about, you know, relatives from all directions coming together and what it means like to share, you know, in this oppression is this colonialist. I mean, everything that you just mentioned as you just went down that terrifying list is all repercussions of colonialism and expansion and abuse of people, of earth, of resources. It's just this insane greed and abuse. So we're standing in solidarity. So when you come to camp, it's very evident in Red Warrior Camp that wherever we come from in life, we're standing up against these systems and we're united in that.
Jackie or Jules, do you have anything to add?
I just want to add that it's really beautiful to see all the different nations, you know, come that united for this. It's not only the Ocheti Shakoi, it's much more nations, people from, you know, all corners of the world. Actually, you know, we meet all kinds of people that come through, and it's just really awesome to see everybody coming together to help us fight this black snake.
Jules, I'm curious, you know, you talked earlier about the meth problem, and, you know, these symptoms of oppression and poverty, is this camp able to provide a space for healing those wounds?
Well, that when I get back, that is going to be my space in camp. The medics, I had a meeting with the medics before we left, and, you know, we talked about doing, like, maybe a talking circle or even... not so much AA meetings, but, you know, more into our cultural, like maybe having sweats for them. And, you know, because some of the people that I've seen from my reservation who were, you know, into addiction, the young people that have gone up there, they don't want to go back home. They found their place there. They found their warrior spirit. And, you know, they're really getting involved in a lot there. And so it makes me really happy. And it's really good healing. And, you know, my daughter right here, she's 13. She lost her best friend 2 months ago to, she was shot by a man who was addicted to meth. And I, you know, I took her to the camp, and it's been really good healing for her also. You know, we have sweat lodges set up. There's a lot of them set up everywhere. We have one at our camp that we utilize for the women. And there's, you know, that there's always an opportunity just like about every night, you know, to go and pray and go into these ceremonies. So we, you know, we try to make sure everybody's needs are met, you know.
So Jackie, do you have anything to add?
I think it's just incredible to see, as Mama Jules was saying, like all the different nations come together because we're all fighting our monsters, and for everyone to just take time away from their people and from their battles to come fight against this snake, it's just incredible. You know, it's this is how it all starts. You know, it's been happening for you know, we always come together, but something like this is like incredible and historic to see all those flags flying together in solidarity, and all these different flags and different people from different nations that didn't have their flags with them. And it's just so cool to see all that community, because, you know, that's one thing that a lot of people don't get to experience is community. And just to feel like at home, it was so powerful to meet people like in a week, and all of a sudden, like, you know, you're more family than I've ever had. So it's a great experience, you know, not even just an experience, it's just great family out there. Yeah.
What is, maybe Anthony, you can talk about this. What is the plan for winter? You know, for prepping for winter and the continuing of the struggle? Because right now there's sort of a lull in the state's response. They seem to have backed off, and it almost appears their strategy is to wait it out till winter, thinking that you will just go away.
Well, first off, they're not waiting anything. They're working continuously every day, every night, Sunday, Saturday. Your birthday, Jesus' birthday, it really don't matter to them. It's about money at the end of the day, you know? And so they're going to continue to do these things, and they're going to say things that they're going to put out to the public that's not necessarily going to be true, but it's going to be to either calm them down, to either A, stop them from going to the camp, B, stop supporting the camp, or C, just let it wash away like all everything else that happens. And people forget about it and they go back to their job. But the reality of things is they have a deadline to make. And if they don't make that deadline, then they have to reapply and do other things and keep. So it's a lot of headache for them to if they miss this deadline. And so they're continuously building, they're continuously doing stuff. And so, like, we just got to remember, like, really, if the government's telling you something, you really got to question it no matter what it is. We can't always take everything that they say like, oh, well, that's what they said. So, you know, we'll just leave it at that. Like, okay, they can say that, but are they going to enforce that? You know, there's a lot of things that people say, but can they back it up? Can they enforce it? And then the other question was being asked about the winter camp. The winter camp, there's camps that are there. Other than that, I can't really get too much in depth into what we're talking about, because again, we want to reiterate, we're at war right now. This is a battleground that's out here right now against the earth. And so, like, we're taking it with that seriousness, because we got to remember that not only is it sovereign nations that is up at stake, but there's unfederally recognized tribes that are there as well. But they also have to respect, they as in the United States, has to respect that this is a nation to nation thing that's going on here. This isn't just people that are living in North Dakota. These are nations that are living within states that have treaties. So it's like there's a different level of things that are going on here.
Going based on that, part of this tour has definitely been to debunk the myths that are out there, as that the construction was paused for a time, or that there were certain limits of radius that were placed, or that they will stop during winter. And the reality is that we were there. We were seeing this, and they did not. They did not respect any of this. They continued, and like I was saying, they were working nights. They were working weekends. They're not stopping because they are trying to meet this deadline. So that's why we're preparing for winter. And part of this tour is to raise money to winterize the camp. As you may know, it gets negative 60. And we're trying to keep everybody safe. And, you know, part of our tour is also a call out to whoever can make it out there to the front lines with us to stand with us. And if you don't have anything, if you don't have the money to buy your equipment or come prepared for winter, we want to make sure we're taking care of you and that you're taken care of as a warrior standing up next to us. And that's been a lot of what this tour is about, is to continue the awareness and to ask our allies, to ask our brothers and our sisters out here, if you can't make it out there, continue these fundraisers for us out here. Continue the awareness. Continue speaking about this and asking for donations as we're out there in the winter still fighting this.
Tell us a little bit about the tour and what you're actually going to be talking about. And the other question was, what is this deadline? What is the actual deadline?
I don't have the specific day, but I do know that before we left, which was now the 29th, so which that's 2 weeks ago, they had a 6-week deadline to meet.
Okay.
So we're approaching fast within this month. So I think they're going to, that's why they're working like overtime. So they were working today. I don't know if you guys saw that there was an action today that stops today's construction, which is very effective. So, we're sending our prayers to our brothers and our sisters that made that happen today with prayer and ceremony, like always. And as you can see in the videos, still being met with a militarized force by the police with tanks and lethal weapons pointed at unarmed protesters in prayer and ceremony. And yet this construction was still stopped by that. And
that's
powerful. That's so powerful. Look at this prayer. It has them scared. Prayer and ceremony has them shaking.
And, you know, I read an article recently. Crystal Two Bowls was one of the authors, people from the Red Warrior Camp. And it talked a lot about the strategy, exposing the money behind this pipeline. There's all these banks, they're international banks, Japanese banks, and it went through the list. It was pretty extensive, but there was a couple of banks in the U.S. that people should be thinking about and targeting. And in particular, one person from Texas who is behind this, who, you know, he has a music label. He's trying to be sort of this philanthropist, and he's one of the people that people suggested that we should pay attention to. And it reminds me of the Redwood Summer Struggle years ago, in which people began to target individuals personally and, you know, show up at their homes and their businesses and make them feel uncomfortable for participating in this, you know, this destruction. Can any of you elaborate on this, or do you know much about this?
We're definitely asking people to divest from these companies to begin with. We know that, you know, these systems that we're fighting are based on economics. So you divest from these big companies that are participating in the construction of these destructive sites, you know, to please divest if that's something that you can do. Now, I mean, like showing up to people's houses and things like that, I mean, that's a tactic as well. That's direct action as well, because you want to bring attention to the decision makers to make, you know, the steps necessary to stop construction, not just for this pipeline, but as you know, like it's so many various past and present struggles. Even like divest with the different companies that continue with, you know, Palestinian oppression, you know, divest for Palestine is definitely another thing, and it's a tactic. It's yep. It's to get our voice out there and be heard.
Anthony, you look like you were going to say something in response to this.
So Wells Fargo is one of them. yeah, just take it upon yourself. If you can't be there, then, you know, set up your own direct actions that are there. You know, if you happen to end up at somebody's house, then that's cool too, you know. But it's just organic, and, you know, there's not any set rules on how to do these things. It's just take from your experience and what you've seen, especially, you know, out here, like in a place like Los Angeles where they shut down freeways and things like that, you know. So let's really look at tactics and our organizing skills and how to really, I mean, put that energy towards protecting the land, you know, and just like the money and all that stuff's going to be there, and there's going to be issues about that. But we always got to remember our main focus is to put our energy towards the land and the protection of it, protection of the water and of all these things. Because at the end of the day, I mean, as long as we keep fighting, all that greed and all that energy is going to die. And that's the way I see it. I mean, if we can visualize it and come to a collective consciousness as a people, then that'll die. So that's not really an issue for me. You know, I know that's going to come to an end. It's just a matter of what are people going to create for the future? You know, what do they want for the future? And that's got to start now. We got to start changing, like how we handle ourselves every day, you know, and start getting more rooted and figure out what are we going to be in the future? What are we going to do? You know, where are we going to be at? So many bottled waters out here, you know, speaking of water, you know, a lot of the bottled water in the United States comes from California, comes from the Los Angeles area, comes from Northern California, which ends up drying up the sacred sites. And then guess what? There's no more water, and the land gets desecrated, and there's no more animals living there, and it's all dried up. But then guess what? People like us who are in Standing Rock or other places where they need help, they need emergency stuff, emergency supplies, then they're the first ones to get the water bottles. So it's like, let's really look at that. And then the water bottles sit in the sun and they melt and they get plastic in there. And then all that gets into everybody's brains and into everybody's systems that are fighting on the front lines. So it's like, let's really look at this, what's going on. Like, how do we do these things and how we create a better future today in every city and every place where you're at?
You know, Chris, going back to like what different strategies, I was just remembering we were always joking around about like where's Snoop, right? Because he put out a statement saying that he was going to be out there with us, and we waited for him. So, you know, we're still waiting for you, Snoop. And so this is a call out to all the celebrities too that are saying, you know, are backing us up, and to show up. You know, like we heard that there was a whole lot more coverage when Shailene Woodley was out there, and so a lot of people were able to see the reality that is happening. So we're asking for you know, to use your platforms of privilege and come out and stand with us. We're still waiting for you, Snoop. And
where you at, Snoop, and
Mama June,
Leonardo DiCaprio.
all these so-called people that want to, you know, because that's the other thing, you know, we want to mention too, is because like we don't want to co-opt movements. You know, that's one thing, you know, to support a movement, but we don't want to co-opt the movement, because it's one thing to say I support something, and then you get all that people that support that, and now they're paying attention to you, and then now you got a new movie out and you got this and that. So it's like, okay, well then what's really going on? You know, if you really support us and you're a celebrity, then get down to the front lines with that privilege that you have, and take that to the front line. Take that in front of the police, where they're coming at us with guns and all these sorts of police vehicles and military vehicles and all this sorts of stuff. Take that to the front lines. If you ain't afraid, if you got all this money and this power that can take you out of all sorts of situations, well then take it to the front line. You're a so-called gangster or whatever else that you want to promote, then be a warrior for the land. Protect the land. Don't just protect the block. Don't just protect your weight or whatever else that you got on the block. Protect the land. Protect where you at, because at the end of the day, when the land is gone, you ain't going to have to worry about where you getting your money from. Hmm.
Damn straight. Yeah, there's, you know, celebrity is a weird thing. And, you know, it's like, you know, use it if you got it, but it's got to be used for the people.
Remember Muhammad Ali?
That's right.
I want to tell a story about Muhammad Ali real quick, because I got an elder named Wounded Knee D'Okampo who traveled with the American Indian Movement, Longest Walk, the first one that they went on. When they went to the East Coast, they met up with Muhammad Ali, who was going to fight somebody at the time. And they were at the camp. This truck pulled up to the camp and called for my Uncle Wounded, said, come over here. We're going to go bring you to meet Muhammad Ali. And my uncle was like, well, I don't know. It's like, well, maybe I should go. It might be something, you know, that I could talk about, like something like, you know, historic. So he's like, I should go. So he goes over there and he goes to Muhammad Ali's camp. It's up in the woods, and Muhammad Ali is getting massaged on a table, and they bring Uncle Wounded up in there, and Wounded goes to Muhammad and he said, As-salamu alaykum, brother. And Muhammad looks at him. He said, "Malaikum salam, brother. How do you know about that?" He said, "Well, you know, we're connected, brother. It's all, we all one. You know, we're one people." And so Muhammad said, "Well, how can I help you guys? You know, what can I do for your people?" And he said, "Well, we're camped out here with the longest walk. Can you come to our camp?" And so Muhammad said, "Sure, I'll go drive to your camp." And he drove maybe like 40 miles or so with my uncle in his vehicle. And on the way to this camp, there's a flat tire, right? Somebody's pulled over with a flat tire. My Uncle Wounded said, it was a Mexican man. He had a flat tire. Muhammad pulled over and he started changing that man's tire. And he said, Muhammad's security came out the car and was tripping. It was like, whoa, what's going on, Muhammad? And he said, you see what's going on? This man has a flat tire. He said, I'm gonna change it. He said, if you got an issue, then maybe you should get up and change this man's tire. And so they got up and took his place and changed his tire. And Muhammad asked the man, what would you need? What do you need? And he said, well, I'm all right. I just, you know, got to get some gas. So he pulled out a couple hundreds and gave him some money and went to the AIM camp and said, well, what do you guys need from me? And so they said, well, we need to get these people back. All these people came from the longest walk. We're trying to figure out how we could do that. So he held a benefit concert for the American Indian Movement with Stevie Wonder and Buffy St. Marie, and all bunch of people came through, and he helped get tickets back for all the people that came through Greyhound with the benefits that came. So it's like, okay, so let's look at these celebrities and see what can you really do? What can you really do? This is Muhammad Ali that we're talking about, the greatest. Mm-hmm. You know, that's who we're talking about, and that's what he did for the American Indian Movement. And a lot of people don't even know about that story. So that's like something we got to think about when we're talking about celebrities and people with that privilege.
Yep. And now's the time to stand up. I want to ask you guys. There's about the so many tribes coming together. What is that like? How does that feel to see all these tribes coming together, and many of which didn't talk for a long time? How does that feel? How does it, you know, what does that mean for this movement?
I think it's really, really powerful. It's real, you know, very powerful, especially to see the Crows coming in, you know, coming into our camp, and they've been our enemies, you know, for a long time. And they came and, you know, they brought supplies, and that was really awesome to see that. And just to see all the, you know, the people of the world basically coming together for, you know, to help us in our fight for our water.
I mean, do you see this as it seems to me like it's a transformative moment that I'm sure not just you, but the world has been waiting for. I mean, there's struggles going on daily and have gone on for years, you know, but there's something special about this because it connects a resistance against settler colonialism, against the destruction of the land, this sort of unity that people are seeing, this ecological crisis we're all facing. I mean, and people I've talked to are deeply inspired by this. And I can only imagine how you feel. But, you know, it's in struggle that we actually define who we are. So if you can comment on any of those thoughts, please.
Well, I think right now it's just the energy of the time. I mean, really, honestly, this all has been prophesized and all this has been already come. And, like, if you really look at it, things add up, like, to the point where, like, if we put something out on Facebook, it hits people across the world, millions and billions of people across the world instantly. You know, if it has the potential to do that, as of maybe even 10 years ago, we couldn't even do that, you know. So everything is like right now for a reason, you know. And so that's the energy of right now. It's all been prophesized. People are tired of this. They see the destruction of the land and they see the greed and they see the lies. And people are tired of living within the lie. You know, we're tired of supporting the lie. And that's what's happening when we go to work every day, when we go to school every day, when we collect our bills. We're supporting the lie. And I think everybody right now at this point in time is tired of that. You know, they're tired of the United Snakes of Americland. They're tired of all this. It's time for all this to end, and everybody knows that. Everybody knows that they're on stolen land. It's just hard to admit it and say it sometimes because they know that there's responsibilities that come with those words. You know, and so I think that's where we're at right now, is it's just coming to the language on how to even explain to where we're at right now as a people. you know, because as before, people were lost and didn't even know how they got here. It was just like people got kidnapped and brought over here in all sorts of situations, and now they're just taking the bag over their head and realizing what land that they're on or where they're at, what area they are, you know, physically, spiritually, mentally, you know. And so that's where we're at right now in this time, and I think, you know, with all that, and then something like this happens, people are just like, you know what, we're tired, we've had enough. Like, what can I do? They understand that they have to continue working a job, but they want to figure out how to get out of this idea of working a job. And so they say, well, how do I get back? That's why people are paying attention, because they want to know what they can do. And they don't know how to get out of the system. They don't know how to get out of these boxes. But they see people that are climbing out of those boxes, and they're saying, how can I do that? How can I get to that? And so that's why they're so focused on what's going on right now, because they see us getting out of these boxes, out of these mental prisons. And we're breaking free, because that's what's been prophesied. That's where we're at right now in this reality.
I got a bit choked up with that question. It's just such a big honor, and it's such a big humbling honor to be a part of this fight right now. And I can relate it to my own personal experience growing up and the divisions that came with being mestiza, with being so mixed. And being pulled in all the different directions, because the differences were evident for all the parts that I am, right? Spanish Sephardic Jew, Indigenous Lenca, Italian Palestinian. So I was pulled in all these different ways, whether it was in religion, ritual, cultural, food, even music, all of it. And I just sat there as a little kid, just so confused and so hurt by the fracturedness of who I was. And it hasn't been until I started to grow up that I started to see the commonality and the struggle. I would say I come from past and present diasporas, including my own and my migration to the United States. And to see that unity come together in a global scale is definitely powerful. And it has been just the biggest honor to be with my family, most humbling honor to see the unity that we share within the common struggle, and how that uniting of pieces, the broken pieces, is the strongest that it's ever been. And we're at a good time to change this. And we got to also understand, too, that when we're standing there trying to change things, it's not for us to see it. It's for the generations to come to rebuild.
Absolutely. Jackie, I want to hear what your thoughts are on this. You've been drawing away over there. And by the way, your poster is beautiful. I wish I could show it over the radio, but I can't. But it says, "Defend Standing Rock, Protect the Sacred." It's a beautiful piece of artwork. But anyways, jump in here and tell us your thoughts on what you've been thinking about. And, you know.
You know, it's just like a lot of things. Like, I've like been all over California. Like, I left my res at 17 to see what the world had to offer out there. And it's just crazy going from a city to a city, and then going, just being surrounded by so many people that are just like complacent with everything. And then going out to Standing Rock, where people all want to see one thing, is our water being safe, you know, a better future for the next generation, for the kids that are out there. I spent some time up at the school out there and did some art with the kids out there. And we did an art workshop to show, like, where the kids thought they fit in the community. And it was crazy to see, like, a lot of the kids at the young age, because at the school they're about 6 to 11, and a lot of the kids found themselves, like, positioned themselves, like, they saw themselves on the front line. Some of them saw themselves as, like, caretakers in the community. And it's just cool to see, not cool, it's just incredible to see kids that young know where they want to be in the community, like, out on the front lines, taking care of their elders, because that's what it's about, you know. Like, our kids at there, like, you know, they inspire me. They're the ones, they know what they want, and they want us to have clean water for them, because they're the ones that are going to have to deal with this later on. And to see all those people, like, even elders travel so far to come fight for them, you know, like, it was just good to be home in a place where you didn't have to explain yourself, where you knew why you were there. Not in a community where a lot of people are still trying to figure themselves out. So it's just great to finally be home and stand with family and, you know, reconnect with those roots that have always been there, but just have been, like, not available to you. So it was just, you know, it's an incredible experience to be able to have. So, yeah.
In my political life and history, I think a lot about organizing and non-hierarchical, decentralized relationships and building networks of resistance. And, you know, looking at the climate crisis and how fast things are changing rapidly, that we really don't know what this world's going to look like in 20 years. It's a frightening prospect to actually get your head around to think about where we're headed. And oftentimes I think about, well, you know, this system's headed for a crash. I mean, these people are violent sociopaths who are starting wars for greed and just, you know, the worst aspects of humanity that these people represent. And, you know, it seems to me that when you think and you begin to see what's headed our way, and you know, I'm sure generations behind me have seen this for a long time, and maybe I only woke up, you know, so recently. But what I often think about is, well, how do we build, you know, the society that we're going to be living in, and how do we prepare ourselves for that? And Standing Rock seems to me that, you know, this, and I'm sure a lot of other communities have done this and sort of prefigured the future in a way that we are trying to build and prepare for what is potentially coming. And I think that, like, again, Standing Rock is sort of like, you see that and you're like, oh my God, you know, this is happening right now. Maybe you can, if you have any thoughts on this, you know, about how you think about the future and how you prepare for what's coming.
To dream about the future, right? The radical dream, to dream of a better future, one where things are a whole lot brighter than they are right now. I think that's something to always maintain alive, that hopefulness. Every time that we've entered anything that instills fear, I mean, it's like warriors, but there's fear in every step that you take, especially when we're met with this. Mama always reassures me, our ancestors walk with us, and we step forward with that. So when we think about the future and what we wish for it to look like, we want the generations to follow, to say our ancestors are walking with us, because we'll still continue that, you know. So to look at what the future looks like, I always start by saying our duty and our right and our responsibility is to continue the decolonization process of our mentality on a daily practice, because by default, because of these systems that we've been forced upon, by default, we default to a colonized patriarchal thought. That is our default. Mm. So when we're thinking about the systems that we're going to be rebuilding, we have to think about tradition. And, you know, we talk about sustainability and permaculture and all these movements that are based around indigenous practices and designs of food production and sustainability. More than sustainability, it's actually regenerative, right? You're bringing more to life. That's what we need right now in the world, because even to sustain what is right now, we're on a hole. We need regenerative practices, and those come as well from tradition, from these practices that we need to bring back, to revive that for the future.
Absolutely. Jules, what do you think about this in your work with meth addicts? How do you see in your work, you know, a way beyond that, you know, a way beyond people feeling helpless to get into the situations that they find themselves in? Is it through that struggle? It's not just about, obviously, ending poverty and oppression, but it's probably a lot more than that. You know, how do you talk about that in terms of healing and moving forward?
Well, you know, a lot of addiction, a lot of the meth addiction comes from, you know, they're running from something. You know, it could be their sexual abuse, physical abuse. They're trying to escape that. But if you bring them back to, you know, like me, I like to bring them back to like the Lakota way and remind them, you know, we're Lakotas. We fought. We had to fight. You know, our ancestors fought for us to be here, for us to carry on our traditional ways, you know, and the addiction was just another way of genocide. The alcohol was liquid genocide. The meth is chemical warfare against our people again. It's all man-made. And so I always, you know, I just always, when I'm talking to them, I always, you know, try to remind them, you know, we're Lakota, remember where you come from. Our ancestors are with us. And I that's always remind my little sister here, Chepa, you know, our ancestors are with us, you know, and have that faith. Remember, you know, you need to keep that faith and you need to always remember there is hope. There is hope to beating this addiction. I was an alcoholic myself, you know, and I've been sober 9 years, going on 10 years. And now I'm helping, you know, the tables are turned. Now I am at the opportunity where I'm able to help the young people of my reservation and, you know, and to keep our generations going, to continue this and continue doing what we're doing and to fight, you know, to be able to fight for what is ours. You know, we still have the ongoing fight with the Black Hills. They'll never be for sale, you know, and they have all that money sitting there just waiting for the younger generation to step up and accept it. But it's up to us to remind that younger generation that they are never going to be sold. You know, they're ours. They're never going to be sold. Yeah, they took all the gold, but gold don't mean nothing to us. That's money. That's blood money. You know, that doesn't mean a thing to us. What does mean something is our land, our water, our ancestral treaties, you know, the treaties that the government made with us that they've broken time and time again, in which they're breaking again, building that pipeline through our treaty lands. So we need to, it's up to us to continue to bring this awareness to the youth. To make the, you know, let the youth know that, you know, I'm a grandma, I have grandchildren, I'm a mom, you know, I'm getting up there in age, but, you know, it's up to me as a, you know, we have matriarchal societies. So it's up to me, you know, for my children and my grandchildren to prove, you know, show them that we need to fight. And that's another reason why I did do the lockdown, you know, because we are all warriors. We all, and that's what I always say, find your warrior spirit and get out here to the front lines. We all have that. We just, some of us need to dig a little bit deeper to find it, you know, but find it. We all have it.
Anthony, you looked like you were going to add something to the conversation.
No.
That was beautiful. I mean, you said it, chemical warfare, and, you know, it's, wow, you know, it's exactly right. Yeah. Well, okay, so how do people help? How do they get in contact with you? How can they plug in?
So specifically for us at Red Warrior Camp, we want to make sure that you're following us on Facebook, Red Warrior Camp. There is a GoFundMe account that has been set up. You can find it through our Facebook, and it's also called Red Warrior Camp GoFundMe. And that was started to winterize the camps as well. And as my role over there in camp, I was in charge of getting inventory and getting immediate supplies for medics, building campgrounds, and winterized supplies. So I have all those lists for donations if people want to be sending out donations, if there's organizations out there that have access to medical supplies or things like that that our medics are going to be needing. You can email me at chepa.cubillas@gmail.com, and I'm going to spell that out for you. It's chepa.cubias@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Facebook, Chepa Cubillas, and you can private message me or post something, and I'll make sure I get those lists out to you and send you out to where you can place your donations as well. There's a legal fund for Red Warrior Camp as well that is much needed, as you all have been seeing with the multiple arrests that have been happening.
All right. So you heard it. Go to Red Warrior Camp. It's on Facebook. All the information should be there. Look for Red Warrior Camp on Facebook. The email is chepa.cubias@gmail.com. That's chepa.cubias@gmail.com. And again, Red Warrior Camp on Facebook. So everybody go there and get involved. We've got a few minutes left, so I'd really like to hear some final thoughts from each of you. I want to hear, you know, what would you say to the people listening to this program? And, you know, we've said a lot, and it's beautiful to hear your voices and the messages that are coming through and the call outs and the examples of this resistance is beautiful. So I'd like to go around the table and ask each of you to say something finishing thoughts. We've got about 5 minutes left.
Mama's looking for you, Snoop Dogg. No. Find that warrior spirit, Snoop, and let's lock down.
Bring your lockbox.
Bring your lockbox. I don't share mine.
You're on stolen land, everybody out there in Tongva territory. Remember, you're on stolen land. This is where you at. There's bones underneath the concrete.
Sit on that. I really want to leave with the thought that this is a call out to y'all to continue this. Please, actions. It would warm us in the coldest of North Dakota winters to hear your actions happening across the world here in LA.
Shut down the freeway.
Shutdowns, banner drops, walkouts of schools, of systems. Like, the world is watching. This is a good time to be alive, y'all. You can make a difference. Please don't waste that. It's time.
You know, there's so many ways to support. We're doing multiple fundraisers. We'll be doing one next week for the art that's been out there. We'll be doing a t-shirt sale. You know, all those funds will go to the Red Warrior Camp, getting us ready for the winter. So if you can't support physically and, like, be out there, you know, support financially, because, you know, those funds do go to getting us ready for the winter. Winter gear, you know, it's not the cheapest thing out there. And, you know, Snoop, when you come through, bring us Martha Stewart, too. We know you're home friends. You know, I like them no-bake cookies. And, you know, she my girl. She taught me about that feng shui life. So it'd be nice to see her come through.
We need them Snoop Dogg cookies.
So, yeah, you know, we need that out there. We need you both. And, you know, support, you know, water's life, yo. Never forget that. Y'all got water at home. Everyone back there, you know, it's all water worth protecting, worth fighting for.
You right there drinking water. I know it tastes good. You're welcome.
Remember, Maniwachoni, water is life. No dapple.
Black snake killers.
Black snake killers.
Thank you so much for coming on this show and telling us, speaking your hearts and telling us about this beautiful struggle. It's been an honor to have you. So I wish you the best in the coming months, and you know that. We are all with you there in spirit, and many of us will be there physically. So thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Salamat.
Aho, yeah. Wupila
Tonka.
You have been listening to Indie Media On Air on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. I am Chris Burnett. If you have any feedback or questions, you can write to Chris at indiemedia.org. That's Chris at indymedia.org. Thanks for listening. If you go to Joe,